Next Step 639, September 3rd, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Is it called the build-up? I think that's what it is. What's the opposite of the punchline? Or maybe, no. I have the punchline. It's sort of like a Jeopardy thing, right? What's the question? I mean, they show you the answer and they say, the answer is, and then, what's the question? That's Jeopardy, right? Well, this week I found, like, the build-up to the punchline. You know, I've shared with you that story that I always think about when people come to me, especially this was more prevalent in, I served as a parish priest. People would come up and usually they'd say, we'd like to get a Bible. Can you give us a Bible? And sure, what kind, you know, there's large print, small print. We want the small one, smallest one. And then they would tell me why, because usually they had a child or they had a grandson, granddaughter. We want a small little Bible to put under their pillow. Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, of course it's very nice. And I'd always instruct them that it's just as important as if you put it under a pillow. It's just as important that you also take it out from under the pillow and read it. You know, and then I would share with you, my listeners, that, you know, what would happen? These poor little kids are going to grow up with, like, neck pain. You know, if you have something like a Bible under your pillow and you sleep on it every night, of course you're going to develop neck pain, nothing much else. Anyway, it was like a little punchline to a joke, and I never really thought about that there was a joke that goes before it or the buildup that goes to it. Until just a couple of days ago when my friend sent me this, just this small little joke. I guess it's a joke. It can be looked as mean-spirited. He's definitely not mean-spirited. It's maybe just to draw our attention on certain realities, but let me read it. It goes, buy a Bible, don't read it, and you'll be a Catholic. Buy a Bible, read only what suits you, and you will be an evangelical. Buy a Bible, read it fully, analyze it, reason it, and you will be an atheist. Okay, I'm sharing that with you. He shared it with me. I'm sharing it with you, my Next Step listeners. I hope this isn't your first time listening because you're going to say, what? So, anyway, based on that, and then you follow through and buy a Bible, place it under a child's pillow, and you're an Armenian Christian, right? That's the punchline. Like I was saying, this is the build-up. But it is kind of interesting because in many ways it's true, the last line, of course. I don't want to be judgmental about Catholics, about evangelicals. I personally think that the Roman Catholic Church is probably the most dynamic church on earth. Seriously, with its leadership today, it is doing some incredible things in the ways of social justice, and I'm not there to be critical. Evangelical, you can say it's not my cup of tea, but, you know, they do an incredible job of feeding people in third world countries. And I don't know the mechanics of it, and I've heard there's all kinds of ways of looking at it, but you know what? There are kids that are getting fed. And I have many evangelical friends that swear by it, that evangelical in the sense that they support these ministries because they're very happy with the results. So I'm not here to judge them and what they read. This was just basically a small little statement. But I do want to focus in on the last one. It says, buy a Bible, read it fully, analyze it, reason it, and you will be an atheist. Do you agree with that? I know so many of you read the Bible, and I know you're not atheists, but what does that mean? Do you agree with the statement that it is possible? Can you understand? Let's say it this way. Can you understand that it is possible that if you read it, you analyze it, and you reason it, it's very possible to lose faith even. And I'm sure you've heard of stories like that too. I'm sure you've met people. If not, I have. I'll vouch for it. In fact, last night we were with a group of young people. It's sort of like a bridging generations group that we have. I was meeting with them last night, and we heard a Bible study done by one of the gentlemen at the diocese. And afterwards, I led a little discussion, a short discussion. And one of the guys got up and he said, you know, forgive me, I want to ask this question. And I would say maybe 2-3 times in his statement, he apologized for asking the question. He says, I may sound like a heretic, but this is bothering me and everything. And you know what? I felt compelled, and I did. I got up and I said, you know, don't apologize for the questions. There are no wrong questions. Think about it. There are wrong answers, right? But there aren't wrong questions when it comes to faith. Because, you know, what we're talking about as Christians goes against everything you've been taught. Blessed are the meek, they will inherit the earth. What? Jesus says that. Blessed are the meek. And they will what? They will inherit the earth. Well, you look out there, the people who have inherited and found success are not necessarily the meekest people out there, right? On a grander scale, we're asking you to believe in life after death. Now, you can blindly believe that. That's fine. It's completely up to you. But for the most part, I think people question it. And we're asking you to believe that you can go into a cemetery and come back out. Because common sense tells you, you go into the cemetery and that's it. You get buried and that's it. You don't walk away from that experience. But the Christian understands that death is not the end. And the reason why we understand that is because Jesus Christ taught it, not only in his teachings, but through his death and resurrection. We believe in a person who died and came back to life. And when you look at it that way, you say, how is that possible? What's impossible for people is possible for God. We believe that Jesus Christ is God incarnate. Now, that being said, is that something easy that somebody could understand? No, you have to ask questions. I mean, you have to start asking some questions because it goes against, first of all, coming back to life, goes against our practical common experience. Like for hundreds of thousands of years, people have died and they do not come back, except 2,000 years ago. An event took place. Jesus was badly beaten, bruised, and then killed, executed on a cross. And he came back to life. He came back to life. It's called resurrection. Okay, so don't you think that it's okay to ask questions about that? Of course it is. That's what I was telling this young man. I said, there are no wrong questions. Don't preface your question by saying, this may sound, but this is the only way that in faith, in matters of faith, that you can reconcile with what you may not understand, reconcile with things that would be quote unquote called absurd. Absurd. And in fact, St. Paul says, it's folly, it's absurd. The message of the cross for those who do not believe. I mean, think about it. You know, again, last night in this Bible study, we were talking about the cross, and someone brought it down to, well, we all wear our cross. And it occurred to me, yeah, that cross that we wear around our neck, that we decorate our walls, our cars, our rearview mirrors with, is a device of torture and execution. It would be comparable to us today wearing a small icon of an electric chair, or a noose hanging from our rearview mirror. A device of torture and a device of murder, execution. And yet, the Christians wear that cross. Why? Because of the resurrection, obviously. The victory over the cross. The victory over death. And so all of a sudden, that cross becomes a symbol of victory. Of the revolution really, truly turned around, revolved, so that you have a new meaning, a new understanding, so that you do wear your device of execution around your neck. You proudly display it on your wall because it is about victory. So, you know, when you look, so back to we were talking about, you know, buy a Bible, read it fully, analyze it, reason it, and you will be an atheist. I mean, I know so many people that have spent too much time looking into it, analyzing it, going way too deep, and then coming away and saying, this can't make sense. And I think the biggest problem that people have with it is trying to reconcile these issues that seem to be bothering us at different portions of our life. For instance, the problem of evil. You know, how can God, who's good and all-powerful, allow evil to exist in this world? And if you don't get an answer, it's very easy to lose faith. It's very easy to say, I'm sorry, I can't buy into this. It doesn't make sense. There's a young little kid that was just born last month and developed cancer. What kind of God allows this? There's a hurricane that took place and innocent people were wiped out. What kind of God allows this? There was innocent people sitting around in a town called Beirut. And all of a sudden an explosion took place. What kind of a God allows this? And what about this pandemic? What about this coronavirus? Come on, God. Okay. Did you teach us a lesson? 2 months, 3 months, but do we have to go through this 6-7 months wearing masks, hiding here and there so we don't get it? And these are the questions that come up, and these are legitimate questions that you should be asking. Because here's the other alternative to it. It's basically a programmed robot. And this means a lot to me because, you know, my first 15 years as a priest was spent in Silicon Valley, and I had occasion to be with engineers, I had an occasion to be with software programmers, and I did a little software programming myself. And it was fascinating for me because we were able to make machines. That's all they are. I remember at the very beginning of the computer, when personal computers just came to be personal. In other words, people were buying them. And you know, people were saying, what is this? You know, this is a computer. Wow. And when we tell them that, you know, it's absolutely nothing. It's just a machine that translates ones and zeros, a binary code. It takes that and it processes it into some kind of language. Like, for instance, think about something very simple on your desktop computer, or let's say even on your phone. You have what we commonly call today Windows, right? Not the product, but actual Windows. You have small little windows. One opens up and another one goes, it seemingly, into the background, right? You bring up one window to the front of the screen, the other one goes back. Well, do you realize that that's all just programming? There is no other window behind it. No, it's just a flat screen. And so the programmer has to make it look like one window gets diminished while another gets augmented and one takes over the other window. This is just basic programming. And people are sometimes fascinated to learn that machines are really stupid. In fact, there was a common saying several years ago, garbage in, garbage out. In other words, if a computer messes up and, you know, shuts down, or something fatal happens and it breaks down, closes down, right? You can't blame that machine. It only had a set of instructions to follow. Here, let me make it even easier, okay? Because this is really important, very, very important in our discussion today. Think about it this way, okay? If the computer knows that 1 plus 1 equals 3, if that's what I have programmed it, that 1 plus 1 equals 3, then it will be off on all of its calculations and you have nobody to blame but the programmer itself. So in other words, when I say, computer, tell me what is the result of 27 divided by 1 plus 1, and it gives me 9, it's correct. It's correct. It's not wrong. Because it understands 1 plus 1 is 3. And that's the difference between humans and computers, that we have the ability to reason. That even if we are told that it is 1 plus 1 equals 3, we can then reason it out and say, wait a minute, I got my index finger and my middle finger. The index finger could be 1, and the middle finger can be another 1. Let me put those two together. I'm going to reason this out. 1 plus 1 equals 2. Wait a minute, it doesn't equal 3. But if you've been taught all your life that 1 plus 1 equals 3, imagine how hard it's going to be to decipher that. But here's the deal. A computer will never decipher that. That's it. A human being has the ability to find different metaphors. Okay, you told me 1 plus 1 equals 3, but wait a minute. My fingers are digits. There's a 1 and a 1. My toes are digits. They can have a 1 plus 1. The cup on my desk, there are 2 cups. 1 cup plus 1 cup equals 2 cups, not 3. So now I'm starting to reason it out. And basically, that's our difference between us and computers. And so, as people, you have a right. You should be. A computer will never think about it. It can go on for centuries with that same program as long as there's an electrical current that will not erase its memory. It knows that 1 plus 1 equals 3 because of a mistake made at the beginning by a programmer. And so it's going to live with that in its mind. Now, of course, I'm talking primitive levels, and this is what's exciting today, what's on the horizon. Actually, it has happened when we talk about artificial intelligence. We now have computers that are able to think upon themselves, to think, how did I get there? Exactly the same way that we do it, right? If as a child we were taught 1 plus 1 equals 3, and now, at age 11, you're sitting there with your shoes off on a nice summer day, and you wiggle your toes, and you go, wait a minute, I got one toe and one other toe, and that equals 2. You have now thought about it. You have now gone through the thinking process, the reasoning process, and come up with your own solution. Now, what would you be at this point if you continued to believe in 1 plus 1 equals 3? What would you be? Do we dare say stupid? Do we dare say you'd be wrong? Well, this is what we get into when we come to matters of faith. Imagine there are people who grow up with different ideas about faith, different ways of understanding. For the most part, there's a very immature understanding of all things faith. And, you know, I know you want to say that, well, Jesus says have faith as a child. I think he's talking about trust. He's talking about our absorption of the information, our complete dependence. But he's not talking about us checking our brains in at the door. Like, in other words, when I come into church, I am no longer a thinking individual. I'm going to check my brain in at the door. And for that 1 hour, I'm going to just look up and hope that something, you know, makes sense to me. But if it doesn't, I'm fine. That's not what God wants. Because what is that? We just defined it. It's a computer. It's a robot. It's something that has absolutely no feeling, no ability to check itself, to turn on itself, to put a light on itself and say, no, this is why I have arrived at this point. This is very important when we're talking about issues of faith. And this is a healthy way of looking at it. What happens a lot of times, and going back to our statement that buy a Bible, read it fully, analyze it, reason it, and you will be an atheist. The reason why people end up losing faith is not having that proper ability to reason it out. They'll take bits and pieces, like from the evangelical model. They'll take bits and pieces from the Catholic model, and in other words, we won't read it, but we'll understand it the way we've been told, and they don't apply the very, very basic common sense reasons. And that's what I try to do with you here on The Next Step. That's really one of the big challenges that we've had through the years, even before The Next Step, is the ability for us to be in communication. I have always called my Bible studies questions in faith, exactly for that reason, because we all have questions. We all should have questions. We should have questions that, like I said, because it's absurd. If you don't, you're going to say, what? You mean somebody came back to life? Yes, somebody did. And it makes all the difference from now to the end of eternity, whether you buy into that or you don't. So let me understand it. I mean, I use that. I said, when you buy into it, think about it. You go for a, when's the most you've done your research, right? You buy a car, spending a few, couple, 10, 20, 30, $40,000, whatever it is. I know some of you, I know Next Step listeners, we are in the big categories too. Okay, let's say you're going to spend $250,000 on a car. If you do, please call me. I've got a bridge I want to sell you. No, so you're going to make a big investment in a car. You do your due diligence. You go out there. You at least, at the very least, go and ask a few questions, don't you? You at least look at a few different price tags and models. You do your research on it. And now we're talking about matters of faith. Of course, it's okay to ask those questions. But what happens is when we get too deep into it, we start going the route of illogic. And let's do that when we get back. We take a break every week for the song of the day. I'll share this one with you. Back in a few minutes and we'll talk about the illogical ways that we go sometimes.
Side by side, after the
Zither Nug, an old classic, very old classic, and don't ask me why, I'm just in the mood for it today. Zither Nug, performed by Arax on their Crossing album. I think this came out about 4 or 5 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, we will have a link on today's show notes so you could check out all of their music. And like I always say, you know, if you like the music, do support these artists because they really do something that not everybody can do. They share their talent. Zither Nug, one of my favorites. A classic from old, brought to you today, 2020. Talk a little bit about the illogical ways that we sometimes end up looking at different things. You know, I'm coming from a week this week where a lot of interesting things happened to me. I shared this with my Bible study group the other day. Last Sunday was the story of Jesus calming the sea. And when you think about, you know, is this really possible? Did Jesus calm the sea? You know, you start thinking of the movies, because this is one of those scenes that makes for great drama. And to see it on the big screen, now you go, oh, this is beautiful, you know? So the 12 get into a boat, and all of a sudden, there's waves. There's crashing waves. There's water coming into the boat, and they are ready to capsize. To sink. They're going to die. They're going to be lost. Wait a minute. Wait. Was Jesus with us? Of course he was with us. Where is he? Let's at least say goodbye to the master, right? We're going to die. Let's at least, or at least find out what does he have to say. What? He's asleep? Yeah, that's what the scripture tells us. Mark chapter 4, verse 35 and following. Jesus was asleep in the back of the boat. Not only was he asleep, but very comfortably too. It says he was with his head on a pillow. So imagine this whole situation is going on and there's Jesus in the back of the boat and he's asleep. So anyway, when they wake him up, he looks at the wind and he rebukes the wind and the sea. And it says immediately calm prevailed. There was calm over the ocean. It's interesting in Armenian, it's harar, which is peace. There was peace, which is calm. You know, it's the same word of for peace is for calm. It was, I learned so much just reading this one passage. And this is what I mean by Bible, we read it, right? What does it say here? Buy Bible, read it fully, analyze it, reason it, and you will be an atheist. No! Yeah, that's right. I said no. Now, during the first part of the show, we were talking about it. We're talking about like analyzing, looking at it, and you come up with all kinds of questions. But no, the answer isn't that you turn into an atheist. Those questions turn you into a human. They turn you into someone with a mind, someone with powers of rationality. They turn you into somebody who is going to question not only the scriptures, but question God. And in so doing, what are you doing? You're questioning yourself, your parameters. What are your restrictions? Where are you at in life? And let me help you get to this point, okay? Because this is really, really important. It's an important part of my ministry. Because I don't think that by reason you end up being an atheist. I think by applying reason and logic to it, you end up being even a stronger Christian. Because you realize that there is something greater than a two-step argument, you know? Two-step. You have two givens, and then, therefore, you get to the third thing. Such as the problem of evil, right? God is all good. Step one. God is all powerful. In other words, he can change things that are bad. And if he's good, he should want the good. He should change the bad. And step three, evil exists. Well, that's a reality. We know evil exists. So therefore, either God is not powerful, or therefore God is not good. Right? I mean, it would just follow. One of those statements can't be true if we know evil exists. That's, you know, that's basically how the logic goes. And what I'm here to tell you is that whether it's a theodicy, whether it's the question of evil, the problem of evil, or anything else in your life, it's not a matter of analyzing by logic and reason that gets you. It's by not thinking. It's by just accepting what you've been told. Yeah, that's it, you know. Everybody, not just our listeners, not just people of wealth, not just those impoverished, those people who have no ability to pay for their goods and services and are living in extreme poverty, everybody is a product of their environment in this sense. That's how they formulate their worldview. Imagine if you were living meal to meal. Imagine if you were living from, you know, paycheck to paycheck. Imagine if you were living, you know, comfortably but not too well. Imagine if you were living fine. Each one of these people, different economic statuses, will perceive the world in different ways. Not only the way they look at themselves, but the way they understand their neighbors. They understand their relationship to their neighbors. A lot of times we get excited about it and we say, well, how dare they think this way or that way, without understanding that everybody is a product of their upbringing. I mean, just do it in your head. Think about if you were to wake up in a tent city on the streets of New York or Los Angeles. You didn't have hot water running. You had to look and find a place to relieve yourself. You didn't know whether your next meal was coming. That would condition the way you perceive everything. You might see that somebody who's coming up close to you, you might be wary of them. You'd be suspicious. There's conspiracy. It adds to the way you have a worldview. Does somebody want to help you? They're telling you they want to help you. Why should I believe you? This goes from the politicians down to the social worker who comes up to you. Now, think about the other extreme. Think about somebody who you think about yourself living in a penthouse in that same New York, and having waiters, having butlers, having chauffeurs. I mean, you'd basically have atrophy. Excuse me. You'd basically be saying, hey, what is there to do? No, you wouldn't be saying, what do I do with my life? Let me just wither away. You find new things to do. And so you have opportunities to pursue different things. You'd be using your time differently. It wouldn't be a gathering a hunting society that you lived in. No, you'd be paying for somebody else to gather and hunt for you, essentially, right? I've seen this in my life. You go and you talk to somebody about Jesus, about matters of faith. It depends where they're at in their life. Yeah. So when we're doing the homeless run, you go and talk to somebody about God. God has a very unique place in that person's life. They thank God for the little things, for the bread that they have. And as opposed to, you've got people on the other spectrum. Very, very comfortable, who have extra time on their hands, and maybe we'll organize a small group to put together a Bible study and talk about God. And what's interesting is soon that group will get to a point where they realize that it's not enough to just read, but we have to convert this reading into action. And the guy who's on the street has a rough time at that point to say, I'm going to convert it to action, because the actions have to be taken on themselves. So everybody's at a different point in their lives. And everybody perceives Christ not only in the color of his or her own skin, but also in the place they are in life. As a young person, I know many of you will relate, in your teenagers, in your early adulthood, what was it about Christ that you really clicked with, that really clicked with you? The rebellion against an establishment? Think about it. As young people, what is your condition? In high school, in college, there is rebellion against the establishment, and Jesus clicks with us. And we get to later on in life, you're raising a family, and you see that Jesus cares. And that clicks with us, because your concern is for the welfare of the family that you brought into this world. Later on in life, as you mature and you see things differently, you realize that, you know, there's so many different people, different colors in this world, different faiths. And you realize that Jesus is talking to all faiths. He's talking beyond that Christian experience that you were told was. This is what I mean at the very beginning when I said, listen to it again. Buy a Bible, read it fully, analyze it, reason it, and you will be an atheist. No, because they do not reason it. They reason it by their standards. That will lead you to an atheist. And here's the most basic thing that everyone misses. That's why you're listening to me, right? Everyone misses the point that the Bible did not fall from heaven. That's the first point of reason. And you say, well, what do you mean reason? No, here's the reasoning behind it. Jesus came to this world, and we saw in the story, you follow the gospel narratives, what happens? He is crucified. What happens? He resurrects. What happens? He forms his church. What happens? He commissions his church to get out into the world. Is there a Bible? No. There's no Bible. There's no Bible at this point. The Bible didn't come about until the end of the first century, when we had the books of the Bible, but as we know it as a Bible, it wasn't put together till the fourth century. I mean, there were all kinds of things floating around. And this one little bit of reasoning, in other words, realistically looking at it and putting the facts together, is escaped by everybody. I just don't get it. They talk about the Bible as if it's something that just came, you know, flying out of heaven. No, it was written in the ancient Hebrew language, in Aramaic, in Greek. In fact, the Greek translation is more of the New Testament, at least, is more akin to the original message than is the Hebrew. The Armenian translation has been regarded as the queen of translations because it is so authentically close to the original. Everything that we read today as Bible is a translation. There's very few people that are reading in the ancient language, and those people who do will present a translation. So we're getting it at least secondhand. So you want to get to the earliest ones. You want to get to the earliest, and that's why you're here with me. Ormodoxy, Armenian Orthodoxy, from that time to today. It's very important that, yes, we are living in a real world today with real conditions, and yes, our experience today is also valid, just as the past was valid. But I want to share with you, I was telling you a few minutes ago that, you know, this past Sunday we had the scriptural reading from Mark chapter 4 of the boat and Christ on that boat. And what I'd like to do is share with you a revelation that came to me as I was preparing for a sermon that I was going to give on this topic. We have the same readings year after year, so you want to be fresh, you want to be current, you want to be able to talk to the people. So it's not enough that, you know, okay, that I've preached about this for how many years, but there's a message that has to be told today in the year 2020 with all of the conditions that are happening. And as you look at the story, wow, it reflects 2020. In fact, later on I figured out it reflects every year. It's the condition of on the boat, Jesus asleep. But what really, really hit me this time, the revelation that I had, was in the words. Because I did go back to the ancient text, namely through the Ketubot. And I want to read to you the story. I'll read to you from, let's see, we'll do a New King James Version. It says, on the same day when evening had come, he, Jesus, said to them, let us cross over to the other side. Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was. That's odd, right? Jesus says, let's cross over to the other side. And then St. Mark, the evangelist, makes a point of saying, no, they didn't do that. They wanted to go, and they said, let's take Jesus along. It's very odd thing. Like, in other words, there was a chance that they might not have taken him along, or there was a chance that maybe they didn't want him to come along, right? That's how he's written it. And other little boats were also with them, and a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that it was already filling, and Jesus was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care whether we will perish? Then he arose, rebuked the wind, and said to the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, who can this be, that even the wind and the sea obey him? Now, we did a little bit more in-depth in our Bible study on Monday because I was just so amazed at what came out at me as we were doing. As I was preparing for my sermon, I took a look at the ancient text. And this one statement, why are you afraid? In the ancient text, the word afraid is vadasirt. In other words, why are you of bad heart? In other words, the feeling of fear, where does it emanate from? Where does it come from? It's from your heart. And when you start looking at it in this respect, you understand that fear that we have in life is centered not in the experiences, right? You would think that, okay, if you've been on a boat and it fills up and you know that you could drown, you would understand. It's much like the first time your hand touches fire, right? You touch fire, it burns, it's hot, you draw it away. You may have even got a little burn, right? That burn teaches you so that in the future you do not put your hand in the fire. You know that, right? You have learned that through experience. Not so in this case. Jesus said, why are you vadasirt, bad of heart? I'm not going to use the evil of heart. I don't want to say it's not evil, but why do you have the hardness of heart? In other words, that fear that you have that you're going to be taken over by the waves, that you are going to perish at that moment, that you are coming face to face with your death, is not a natural feeling of the self, but one of the badness of your heart, of the hardness of your heart. And this to me, this small little word, was a very big revelation. Because the fear that we have is the fear of dying. But that fear is not about experiences of people not coming back, but because of the hardness of our heart that we do not trust. We do not trust that there is something beyond that death. And so therefore we fear, and that fear is based on what? On a lack of faith. And where does that faith come from? Well, it comes from the heart, from the softening of the heart. Yeah, that's the reasoning behind it. Reasoning doesn't mean you go against the heart. It's understanding that you do have a heart, that heart and that feeling and that emotion is equally as important as all of the physical evidence that stands in front of you. And that's what I mean. You analyze it and you reason it. You don't end up an atheist. In fact, just the opposite. You come to terms with your humanity and understand how God-given that humanity is. Now, I can go on because this really gets pretty wild. But I'm going to end it right now. And there's other beautiful, beautiful parts to this story that come out. But here's what the takeaway is. If you think about Jesus in the back of the boat, asleep comfortably, you understand that Jesus has given us all of the talents. He has given us all the resources to weather the storms. He really has. He's given us the means to take that boat from one side of the lake to the other lake. Despite all the storms that may come up, despite even the threat of being capsized, of drowning, now you have the ability, and you have the ability to calm those storms. It's a matter of having the faith in the entire program, in the entire message of Christ. And that's what we're called to do. We want to take Christ along with us. There are some beautiful parts, and I'm going to save it for another time. I want you to take this much with you today, and we will continue. There'll be so much more to talk about as we dwell and delve into Armadoxy. And the piano player is here right now. Let's let Susie make her announcement. I'll be back.
Here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of our listeners, for making us the podcast that we are. 12 years, already in our 13th year of podcasting. I appreciate all of the prayers, the encouragement, the support. It just makes this move at a nice pace. And I've got to tell you, I'm very, very blessed to have this opportunity to share my thoughts and share what has now evolved into what we're calling Armadoxy, basically Armenian Orthodoxy without all the hoopla, just kind of down to the bare essence. And I hope you're enjoying the ride. Listen, I want to tell you about a few things coming up. Next weekend, we're going to be out in Yetem once again, that little village. I'm doing 3 pilgrimages, did one last month, doing one this month and one coming up in October. So we'll be there for the Feast of the Holy Cross, the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. This is in California's Central Valley. And it is one of those beautiful places that has a history too, a history for the Armenian community named Eden in Armenian. It is called Yetem on the maps and the postal service. Yes, it has its own zip code, believe it or not. And we go there. There's not too many Armenians there, but there is a beautiful, gorgeous church, this Holy Astvadzin St. Mary Church, and we will be celebrating the Divine Liturgy. This time we're taking a group from the Lady Society, but everyone is welcome to come. So if you feel like it, drop me a line and I'll give you some more information, or we'll see if we could put a little flyer in the show notes for you. Coming up end of the month, I should be out in Rancho Mirage doing services there. If you happen to be in that area, love to see you. Meanwhile, you can get in touch with us on all the socials as well as inhisshoes.org. Well, that wraps it up for today's show. Hey, remember, Monday is Labor Day, an incredible day to honor labor. That one little thing that we do. We talk about it several times. I'll put a little link on today's show notes. My thoughts, my reflections on Labor Day. Very, very important day because, you know, it's the God-given beauty of us to be able to do something more than just exist, but also to create from that labor. And that's what we celebrate. Also, speaking of celebrations, it's my wife Susan's. A big birthday. Wishing her all the best. Happiness, love, harmony, and many, many happy returns. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazquez, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.